And tonight is Wednesday night, April the 2nd, or Chof Zayin Adar Bet. This is the special halacha, monthly halacha class titled Principles of Kashering.
Okay, Rabotai. Okay, Rabotai, what I'd like to do tonight is to try to cover some of the halachic principles that are associated with kashering, not only for Pesach, but any time one finds it necessary to engage in kashering. And the way I formulated the title is not the bottom line, because I want to focus first on understanding the principles that drive this particular requirement, that under certain conditions, if you had a pot that was a milchit pot, and somebody puts some meat in, cooks some meat in it, or vice versa, and you have to kasher the pot, or you want to use something that you use throughout the entire year for chametz, and now you want to use it for Pesach, how do you go about it, and what are the principles that are driving this particular idea? So we will see there are four or five, maybe six key phrases, key ideas that one should try to understand. And once you have a working knowledge of these five, six principles, it then becomes easier to understand the halachic process. And when a rabbi, if you have a question and somebody will ask you a certain question to determine what you should be doing, you'll understand why he's asking you these particular questions. It's not all that complicated. There aren't 50,000 rules and regulations. As I said, it's a handful of principles, but I think it's important to gain an understanding of them. We'll start with the pasuk, which we read 2 weeks ago in Parshat Tzav. Most years, Parshat Tzav is Shabbat HaGadol. It's usually the Shabbos before Pesach. And one of the reasons why our calendar is so designed that more often than not, unless it's a leap year with certain other calculations, one of the reasons why Parshat Tzav is always read the Shabbat before Pesach is because there is one pasuk which happens to touch on one of the principles concerning kashering. So here is the pasuk, and it seems to be a rather innocent pasuk, and I'll give you the background of that particular pasuk. Okay? Parshat Tzav, as the first half of Sefer Vayikra focuses on, is the laws of the korbanot. There are certain korbanot that can only be eaten by the kohanim, and can only be eaten for one day and one night. So if you take, for example, a korban chatat, I engaged in a particular transgression. I ate certain prohibited fats, chelev. I ate chametz on Pesach. And I didn't know it was Pesach. I forgot that it was Pesach. Or I didn't know that you're not allowed to eat chametz on Pesach. I didn't do it deliberately. I forgot. I was unaware. Under those circumstances, you bring a korban chatat. You bring a korban chatat when, had you done that transgression deliberately, there would be a death penalty. If it is done b'shogeg, with an act, with forgetfulness, then you bring a korban chatat. So if you have a transgression for which, if done b'mezid, deliberately, there would be a death penalty as a result. If you now do that activity, b'shogeg, you bring a korban chatat. Therefore I mentioned chelev, certain prohibited fats, and I mentioned eating chametz on Pesach. Both of them are, if you do it deliberately, b'mezid, are punishable by karet, death implemented by God in heaven. But if I were to eat just nevela, or trefa meat, b'shogeg, I go into a store thinking that it's a kosher burger store, and then I, oh, it happens to be McDonald's, and I ate a non-kosher burger, I do not bring the korban chatas. You don't. You say, tell HaKadosh Baruch, I'm sorry, but you don't bring the korban chatas. Because the penalty for eating nevela meat, when you do it deliberately, is only 39 lashes. Not a death penalty. The rule is, you bring the korban chatas only on a transgression, which if done deliberately, has a death penalty associated with it. Fine. I ate chametz on Pesach. I ate chametz on Pesach. I go to the Beit HaMikdash. The Kohen takes care of the korban. And he has to eat certain parts of the meat. He has to eat it in one day and one night. That's what the Torah says. The day I bring it and that night. What happens to the korban next morning? What happens to it? What happens to the leftover meat? It becomes notar. What does notar mean? Leftover. Leftover meat beyond the prescribed time, a Kohen is not permitted to eat. He has to burn the rest of the meat. He's not allowed to do so. He must eat up the entire meat that he's supposed to. But here is now the case. I am in the Beit HaMikdash, okay? I'm in the Beit HaMikdash, and I cooked the meat of a korban chatat. Somebody came today, brought a transgression, a korban chatas. I'm the Kohen. I cooked my meat in the Beit HaMikdash, because it has to be eaten in the Beit HaMikdash. That's why I have to cook it in the Beit HaMikdash as well. Very nice. After I finished eating, I washed out the pot. No problem. Think there's anything going to happen in here? What's going to happen? Why is the Torah going to be concerned about this pot? After I finish cooking, after I finish cleaning it out, why is the Torah going to be concerned about this pot? You know the answer. Because tomorrow morning, what ta'am is in the walls of this pot? What ta'am is in the walls of this pot? Mitam. Notar ta'am. That's correct. So if I were to use this very same pot tomorrow afternoon and cook my own piece of meat in it, what ta'am, what taste is going to be purged from the walls of the pot? What ta'am is going to be purged from the walls of the pot? Notar ta'am. Notar. Because it's after the scheduled time. It's the exact same thing if you purchased a pot from a Gentile. The pot's perfectly clean. Why can't you use it? Because if you take your kosher piece of meat and you apply heat to that pot, what's going to be purged somehow from the wall? The ta'am, the taste of the non-kosher meat that is lodged somewhere in the walls of the pot. When you apply subsequent heat, that ta'am is purged into the item that you are cooking. So the kosher meat that you are now cooking will somehow have some influence of taste from the non-kosher meat that was cooked there a day ago, 2 days ago, 5 days ago. So you have to purge that pot before you can use it for your kosher meat. Here too, if the Kohen cooked the meat of a korban chatat, and now he doesn't purge that pot, and it just sits there, so what meat, what taste of the meat is absorbed in this pot? The taste of the meat of the cooked korban chatas. Okay? Tomorrow morning comes, 5:26 a.m. next day. Dawn the next morning. What type of ta'am is now in the walls of this pot? Notar ta'am. Leftover meat taste. There's no real meat, but the leftover taste that somehow has been absorbed into the walls as a result of the cooking of the korban chatat. So in order to prevent this, the Torah is going to tell the Kohen what to do. That if the Kohen wants to use this pot some other time, he's got to do something with this pot. So let's see what the Torah says. Ukli cheres asher tuvushal bo Yishaver. If you have a earthenware utensil, Kli Cheres, something, we call it China today, but a pot that was made out of earthenware. So, the Torah says, you know what you have to do to that pot? You have to break it. You can't kosher it. Everybody knows that. Can you kosher China?
No.
No. Why not? Why can't you kosher China? What? And so what? But does it absorb? Good. That's what the Torah believes. That no matter how much heat you will subsequently apply to this pot, you are never going to be able to get all of the residue ta'am out of that pot, no matter what you do. You can apply 10,000 degrees of heat, but you will never succeed in getting all of the residue ta'am out. Therefore, the only thing that you can do with this pot is break it, and then what do? Put it back together. Now it's a new pot. Halakhically, it's a new pot. Halakhically, it's a new pot. And I'm going to show you a practical application this in 5 minutes. Halakhically, it's a new pot. So the Torah says, if the Kohen cooked the meat of his Korban Chatat in an earthenware utensil, and he would like to use this pot again, subsequently, and not have to be concerned with the purging of the Ta'am of Notar, if it's a Kli Cheres, he has to break it. We'll talk about what constitutes breaking in a few minutes, but he's got to break it.
V'im b'kli nechoshet, bushala, but if it was not cooked in a earthenware pot, it was cooked in matzah nechoshet, metal, copper, some metal, cooked in a metal, anything that's metal, what do? Umorak v'shutaf b'mayim. So you do something, you cleanse it by putting it into water. What type of water do you think you do? What do? Hot water. Umorak v'shutaf b'mayim. So now, what the Kohen will do after he finishes eating his Korban Chatat meat, to prevent the Isur of Notar from taking effect tomorrow morning at 5:36 a.m., he will now kasher this pot. How does he kasher the pot? Either he takes a huge, gigantic pot, which contains 60 times more than the volume of this pot, and he takes, boils up water, throws this pot in, and now it's kasher. And I'll illustrate that a little level later. Or the other simple way, because when you're dealing with a pot, it's hard to get a pot that can contain 60 times that volume. You fill up the pot with water. You bring it to a boil. You let it overflow. It's now kosher. No. Once it comes to a boil and overflows, it's now kosher. Well, what's the purpose of this kashering? To extract from the walls of this pot some meat that has been lodged somehow in that wall. No one has ever proven that there is a taste in that wall yet. No, you know why no one has ever proven? Because no one's eaten the pot yet. And notice, does it taste like a meaty pot or a broccoli pot? Nobody has ever tasted a pot. But we believe that it's there because the Torah apparently said it's there. So in this particular simple little verse, two halachic principles are applied. One, that there is no effective kashering for anything that is in effect made out of cheres, an earthenware utensil. No way to kasher it. Two, anything made out of metal, there is a simple way to kosher it. What do? You boil water in it, and when you boil the water in it, it purges the taste. Very nice. Yeah, question.
Actually, two questions. If earthenware is glazed...
Okay, that's going to be a good question. Okay? We'll talk about it a little later. In our practice, for if you were a Sephardic Jew, it would make a very big difference if it would be glazed. Because glassware, according to absolute halakha, is one of the most, is the greatest utensil in the world. It doesn't absorb and it doesn't purge. But it doesn't absorb any taste. That's what the halakha says. It doesn't absorb. So if it doesn't absorb, you can eat hot fleishik soup in this glass bowl, 5 minutes later wash it out, and now serve cold potato soup, dairy potato soup. No problem. You can drink a hot cup of coffee after you've drunk a fleishik borscht in this hot... Makes no difference. So Sephardic Jews use one set of glass dishes for Milchik, Fleishik, Pesach all year. No problem whatsoever. Because it can't absorb anything. If it can't absorb, you can use it for as many different things as you'd like. Unfortunately, we Ashkenazic Jews are saddled with 38,000 chumras of the Ramah. And the Ramah writes, we treat glassware like Klicheres. We treat zichuchit, glassware, like klicheres. We just had the klicheres, earthenware utensil, like a klicheres. So what does that effectively do? What does it effectively do about glassware? Can you kasher glassware? No. Just as you can't kasher earthenware utensils, you can't kasher glassware. So having a glazed china is absolutely no difference for us Ashkenazic Jews. Because glass is treated like the china itself. For Sephardic Jews, it might make a significant difference. Yeah.
But you can kosher glass. Let's say you...
No, you can't.
Because like I always...
No, you can't.
I always thought or heard that if you have like a real glass and you soak it for 3 days...
Okay, well I'm going to get to that. That's something which nobody understands. It cannot be explained based on any of the principles today. And the reason why we make you get along, do that, is because technically what? You don't really need any kosher. That's why we let you play this game. I'll explain it. Okay.
So you're saying you can't use a glass?
You cannot use glass for hot and cold milchic and fleishik. Hot and cold milchic, hot and cold hot fleishik.
So you could use it for a hot dairy, but then consider it parav, like meaning have it for
okay.
Tea? I mean, like, you don't...
That's a different question. The answer is yes.
And if it's cold?
Okay, the answer is yes.
Can you,
if you have a fleishik glass that you made to something fleishik, can you use that par for tea? Of course you can. Yeah.
Okay, but here it says asher kibushal though.
That's what it's talking about. What?
You got to cook in it.
Of course. That's another principle that will be extracted. In order to absorb anything, you must apply the medium of heat.
Okay, so in the case of earthenware,
obviously
with a salad bowl or a,
It's no problem. Cold meat dish. Not a problem.
Fine.
Not a problem. There is no such thing as absorption without the medium of heat. No such thing.
Do you consider dishwasher?
No such thing as absorption without the medium of heat. Therefore, if you were to take a cold piece of meat and put it on your dairy spoon, on a dairy plate, and use your dairy knife and dairy this, and call me up or do, I'll say wash it off, and that's all you have to do. Why? Because there is no absorption in the plate, the fork, the knife, unless it is applied with heat. There is none. Absolutely none. I told this to the Mishnah class last Shabbos. Something when we were talking about a different principle. There was a blackout a couple of weeks ago in some neighborhood. Somebody had chicken in the freezer and ice cream. And when it melted, the ice cream melted on top of the chicken. What should she do? I told her, take this chicken out, wash it off, and that's it. That's all you have to do. Nothing to worry about. Yes.
Could we go next to the pot with the overflowing water?
Yeah.
It doesn't need a stone.
It's quoted in Shulchan Aruch to have a stone. That's just to indicate that it's really boiling hot water. It doesn't really need the stone. That is correct. That's correct. Yeah.
What is heat? Does heat constitute, like, does it have to be yad soled?
Yes, that's the definition of heat. That's a good point. What constitutes heat? It doesn't require boiling. It's not 212 degrees. Yad soled espo. What temperature is yad soled espo? That's homework for tomorrow. You will do the following. You will get a thermometer and boil up hot water, put your thermometer in, and just tell me at what temperature you will have to, right? Did your daughter do that? That was the assignment from Shabbos. To a time, to a sea, and I said, don't quote me that I asked her to do it. To try and yacht select. It's about 117 degrees. That's what Rabbi Kandel suggests. About 117, he said he tried. 117 degrees is yacht select. Below that, no absorption possible. And you're right. It says tivusha, if it's cooked. If the Kohen would just place cold meat, korban chatos meat, in a pot, the Torah wouldn't be telling him to do anything. The Torah would tell him to wash it off, and that's it. So principle number one, to absorb anything, it needs heat. Definition of heat is yad soled etbo. Temperature above, whatever arbitrarily to say, it's 117 degrees. If it's made out of earthenware, there is no way to kosher it whatsoever. If it's made out of metal, it can be kosher. In a pot in which you cook it, you kosher it pretty much the exact same way in which you cooked in it. How did the Kohen cook the meat? He took a pot, he put in some water, and threw the piece of meat in. And he made flunkin, I don't know what he made, boiled meat, something that we don't eat today. Boiled meat. Very nice. So here is a second principle that will be communicated. I'm going to show it in the Gemara as well. It happens to be on the bottom of the page, letter bet, kibol o, kach polto. What does kibol o mean? In the exact same manner in which something absorbs, that's the way it purges. Yeah, let me define. The Kohen cooked the meat in a pot. So the absorption was through cooking. Therefore, the purging should be done through cooking as well. You boil up the water, you boil the water, and that purges the ta'am that is somehow latent inside this wall. Yes?
We mentioned the 60 times. You said you put the pot in 60.
Right. Because that happens, that's a different, I shouldn't have said that, that happens on a different principle. That's called bifl. Okay, I'll get to it a little later.
And my question is, I wonder how that was, like, my kid's cousin.
I'll get to it a little later, okay? I'll get to it, yeah.
If the pot was washed before it turned nosar, then there was no heat to turn it flavor into nosar. You know what I'm saying? If the pot was washed...
With what?
From carbonata.
How is it washed? It has to be purged. Washed with what? Cold water? Cold water is not going to purge it.
The flavor turns into nosar even though there's no heat at that moment.
The flavor doesn't have to turn into nosar. It doesn't need heat. Because it was already absorbed how? Through heat. The meat was cooked. Just as time goes along, the taste now switches. Up until now, it was permissible taste. At 5:36 a.m. tomorrow morning, what happens to that taste? It turns prohibited. Just as the real meat would turn prohibited. Doesn't require any additional application of heat. Yes.
Is the increment of time an important concept?
We will see. What do you mean increment of time? So when you're going to use it?
Yes. So
we will get to that. I didn't say anything about it yet.
I know. Okay.
I didn't say that's going to be a very important principle. We'll get to it.
So right now, two principles or three principles have been established. Right. Now, I'm going to give you a practical application of Yishaver. Okay? Rav Moshe Feinstein has in his tshuvot to use the Kli Cheres application of Yishaver. Because if you're going to take a plate and smash it on the floor, you're not going to be able to use it again. Right? You're not going to be able to use it again. However, if you have a self-cleaning oven, you can kosher china by putting it in a self-cleaning oven when you go through a self-clean cycle. Not every set of china can withstand that type of heat, but many of them can. Particularly the older, people told me they've done this. The older set of china, I wouldn't recommend you do the whole set at one time. Try one piece. One piece to see if it works.
Why is that okay?
I'll tell you what happens. The heat becomes so intense, it's nearly 1,000 degrees heat, that what technically happens is that the pot is theoretically and melted down and reshaped again. That's halakhically what happens to it. So halakhically, the exposure of such heat is considered as if it was yishaver. The plate broke. It's no longer a usable plate at this moment. Now, the subsequent, the continued application of that heat remolded it, reformulated it, and you can kosher any set of china. People have asked this all the time. I inherited an incredibly expensive set of china from my grandmother. Unfortunately, she wasn't kashrut observant. So the answer is, I'm sorry, you've got to sell it. Nothing you can do. Because you can't kashrut china. But if you want to take, if you see that it can withstand the heat of a self-cleaning cycle, you can kashrut the entire set to go from trade to kosher, and from Chametz to Pesach. And it's based on this pasuk of Kli Cheres Yishaver. Don't ask me how to explain it. I'm not a scientist. I didn't stick my head into the self-cleaning cycle to see what was in. But Rav Moshe has this in his tshuvot. And I'm sure, again, his son-in-law, Rabbi Kendall, probably explained to him what's happening. And that's why he said it was mutter. Yes.
Is there any principle that if you have that china and you put it away for a year and don't...
Absolutely not. It's the biggest mistake around. It doesn't exist. It's not quoted any place. If you don't use something for a year or 10 or 20 years, it means absolutely nothing. That's quoted by the Mordechai, one of the major Ashkenazic Rishonim, in one case only. Stam Yena. I don't want to spend a lot of time on it. Stam Yena means wine which has been purchased, handled, or purchased from a Gentile. Okay? We know that we don't drink any wine that has been handled by a Gentile. Why? There's nothing not kosher about it. It's wine. No, there's nothing not kosher about it. However, in the days of the Torah and early Talmud times, particularly the Torah times and prophet times, Gentiles took wine and used it in their pagan worship. That's called Yayin Netzach, where you pour wine for idolatrous purposes. That type of wine is Asur Midda'oraita. It's 100% kosher wine. It's Kedem wine. It's Carmel wine. But if a Gentile uses it and pours it La'avodah Zarah, you're not allowed to eat it according to Torah law. It's Asur V'Hanoh.
Even the Mabushal?
Even? One second. Today, we don't have pagans pouring wine living in the United States of America. They don't pour wine, Lavoy Dezer. There's very little of real Lavoy Dezer. So the rabbis legislated and said, you know what, just to make sure that you don't drink real Yayin Netzach, we will legislate and say, any wine handled by a Gentile you can't use. That's called Stam Yena. Stam Yena. Plain, ordinary wine. There's nothing
There's nothing unkosher about wine at all. It comes from a grape. Since there is no real concern about the kashrut of this wine, there are a lot of leniencies. One is if it's mevushal. Why, if you have wine that's mevushal, a Gentile can handle it? Because in pagan practices, they never used cooked wine for what? For their pagan rituals. They never did. That was a fact. They never used cooked wine in their pagan ritual. So if there was never any pagan ritual with cooked wine, why do I have to worry about that regular cooked wine will possibly have ever been used in a pagan ritual? Therefore, the Isur of Stam Yenam doesn't apply to Mevushal wines. There's a famous Rambam that says that the wine that you use for Kiddush has to be wine which cannot be used on the Mizbeah. The Rambam says, whatever wine is disqualified, the Rambam says you can't use Mevushal. You can't use Mevushal wine for Kiddush. I'm not going to Rambam that. So here, because the wine today is not really Asur, if I have utensils that absorbed, that will use wine in their cooking, right? So now, if a Gentile handled the wine, and you didn't realize it, and you used the wine, you cooked the product. Are you ever going to serve that food? Of course not. Now, 1 year has lapsed. Here, the Mordechai says, you know what? I'm going to let you use the utensil. You know why? Because essentially, there was nothing wrong with it from day one. What happened? A Gentile touched it. Big deal. Okay, we honor the Issa de Rabbanon. But to carry that Issa de Rabbanon forth for 90 years, the Mordechai said it doesn't apply. But whenever there was real absorption of something prohibited, the 12-month factor plays no role whatsoever. It's something that grandparents may have heard. It's just it's borrowed inappropriately from that halacha. Yes.
What about what happened in Muncie and elsewhere 2 years ago? Didn't they say that people could use their china?
Okay.
It was community-wide.
Okay, I don't know. That's a different issue. The question is, did you actually buy them, you know? You don't know. But not every lot, every batch was not kosher. So there was rove questions. But it's not tonight. It's not our issue tonight. It's a different question. It's a different question. Fine. Let's move on. I want to show you two or three other principles that are incredibly important. Okay. Look at source Gimel for a minute. Source Gimel. Okay. So it's the end of that first line. There are two dots. Tonu Rabbanan. I'm going to read a couple lines of a braita. Halokeach klei tashmish min ha'ovdei kochavim. Somebody purchases utensils from a Gentile. Okay. So now there are going to be several illustrations of what you might be buying. Dvarim shelo nishtamesh bahen. If you bought a new utensil, shelo nishtamesh, that was never used. Okay. Do you have to kasher such a utensil? Fine. Never been used. So what do you have to do before you use it? You have to be tovel. So the Torah runs. The Gemara runs. Mat bilan vehen tovin. You immerse it in the mikvah. That's a mitzvah d'oraita. Pasuk says in Parshat Matot, it's called Geulei Midyan, when you purchase or you engage in war and you take as part of the loot, you take the utensils from the Gentile, you must immerse them in the mikvah, even though they've never been used. Dvarim shenishtamesh behen al yidei tzonah. You bought something from a Gentile and the Gentile used it with coal. Okay? Kigon, kosot, ketoniyot, sluchiyot. Okay, let's use kosot. Glasses. Obviously drinking glasses. So what do? Madichan, you wash them off. Why do you have to only wash it off? Just make sure that he doesn't have any trace of meat left on it someplace. Just wash it off. And then after you wash it off, what do? Matpilan, you title it. Because you bought it from a Gentile, you title it. Very nice. The Hain Tori. Dvarim shenishtamish behen al yidei chamin. Any item which you purchase from the Gentile, and the Gentile uses it by applying heat, chamin, to go on hayoro. Yoro is a pot. Vahakum kumusin. Also some types of pots. Umechame chamin, and water heaters. Mat iman, you make hamke Allah. Hamke Allah is kashering just the way the Torah described. You kasher something with water, that's called Hada'Allah. Why? Because that's the way this Gentile happened to use it. What do you do with a pot? You put in some water, you put it on top of a flame, or expose it to some heat, and you cook something in it. So the way to kasher it is to be mad'ilah. To kasher it is the exact same way. So if you have spoons, silverware, which was used by a Gentile for hot food, or if we have chametz utensils and you want to kasher it, just boil up a pot of hot water and dump them in. That's it. Dump them in one at a time. That's all you have to do. 1 second. Yeah?
What's the pot
going to
be, honey, that you're
in theory, yes, it would be best, believe it or not, to do it into a kosher pesach pot. Because the principle that it works on in the pot situation is bitul. Because what happens when you have the immersed ta'am in this knife? What happens to it? When you put it into the boiling hot water, what's going to happen to it? It's going to be purged. But there is 60 times more water than there is the little tom coming out of each stone. Therefore it's mutter.
So the best way to do it is in a...
That's a kosher in the pot.
But either way, if you want to kosher it, makes no difference. If you kosher the pot first, then it is kosher the pot already. Same thing? Yeah.
Is this only for something that's been used for cooking as opposed to roasting?
Yes. That's the next line. Hold on. Yes. I didn't say anything about roasting it. We're talking about cooking in a pot.
It has to be water to apply.
Correct. That's the only thing to which Hada'Allah works. Hada'Allah, because the rule is, Kibol'o, Kach'Polto. The way it absorbs, that's the way you have to purge.
What is, yeah. Is there an amount of time that it has to boil in the pot? Like, do you want to capture?
1 second. If the pot itself?
No.
The silverware? Once the water's boiled, throw it in, you can take it out 2 seconds later.
If I buy a pot from a goy and he took milk and he was boiling trace meat in milk, water will purge that?
Of course.
Okay.
Because it's a liquid.
Okay.
100%. Yes.
So why would you be dealing with a short term like that where there's not boiling, and what is the point?
Because we're crazy. In theory, with us, you don't have to cash a bet.
You don't have to cash a bet?
Why would you not have to cash a bet? Because unless you drink hot chametz wine in it, chametz wine,
but you're never... You're washing it with your chametz?
Hold it. We'll see. First of all, that's a different issue. What happens if I took my bechus and I soaked them with my chametz utensils? That's a different question. But if somebody does not do that, the answer to your question is you don't have to kasher bechus. Why are you startled? We just learned the principle.
Because when you're washing it, you have to let it go.
Well, with what?
Soap.
What soap? Soap is not chametz.
No. You're taking a bath and you use it, and let's say you're washing it with hot water. I mean, your hand is hot. More than 100.
Washing what with? It has to absorb chametz. Sponge is not chameh. Soap is not chameh. It has to absorb chameh with heat in order to demand kashering it for Pesach.
So if it's a cold breadcrumb that's touching the kiddush cup,
nothing. You wash it off and that's it.
You just work the cup. You don't have to kasher your Pesach.
Okay. Many people will not soak bechers in the dishpan with dirty pots with chametz. Many people not. So if you don't do that, if you just wash them by hand, separate, don't let them soak. Not only theoretically, I can promise you the becher is not chametz thick.
And you keep saying soaking, but it really would have to be boiled to
soak it. Soaking in boiling hot water with chametz in there, or a chametz utensil.
Throwing it in while you're cooking.
Now, what?
Throwing it in while you're cooking.
Yeah. So that's number two, please. That's example number two. Now, so what do you do? Magilon, and then makbilon, then you immerse it, vein tovrin. Now comes a category we haven't seen yet. Dvarin shenishtamesh bahen al yidei ha'or. Something that is used, no water. It's cooked over a fire. Roasting, a spit. Kigon, hashpudin, v'ha'askalot. Those are spits. Will you take something and you put it over the fire directly? Don't look at the next one. Tell me how you're going to kasher it. The same way. You'll make a little fire. You'll take them and put them over the fire, and now it'll kasher it. That's exactly what you do. That's what you do. You're barbecuing it. You're going to barbecue your whatever it is to get rid of the absorption of the non-kosher meat which this Gentile used with this spit. Precisely. Very nice. So, okay. What have we not yet seen? Something which we do quite often. What? No, something much more frequent than that. What? An oven. A regular oven. Baking something in the oven. It's not that it's water. You don't stick the product directly in the fire. It's just dry heat. There's no discussion about that here. You know why? They didn't do it. They did not do it. So here there is some debate about it. Okay? Some debate. In the Al-Tahaim, how did they always tell you what must you do to an oven to kasher it for Pesach? Good. Because, and that would be, a blowtorch is exactly like what application? Like what? Like real fire. Exactly like a fire. That's correct. That's the way they would do it. Huh? And some people would spend hours upon hours trying to blowtorch their oven. And we've heard your grandparents will have horror stories about how many ovens were totally destroyed by this particular attempt. But, however, other rabbanim, they'll tell you that the way to kasher it is the same way you use it. You apply the principle of kibolo takpoto. The way it absorbs is the way it purges, and the halakhic lingo for this type of purging, it's called libun kal. Like you have Bud Light, right? This is libun kal. It's not water, so it's not hagalah, but it's not applying directly to the fire, so it's called in halakhic literature libun kal. Just put the stove on the highest possible temperature. And now, whatever, in theory, it should be, if you wanted to be exactly miduyah, it should be as long as it took this Gentile to cook his non-kosher roast. 3 hours, well, I don't know. Whatever it is, it probably doesn't need all that. But it should be on an hour, highest possible temperature. If it's the highest possible temperature, then you know that any purging in this oven will purge everything that has been absorbed. Because if it can go to 500 degrees, you know for a fact that the maximum absorption could have been at 500 degrees. Of course, because if you want to use the oven for comments. Because if you don't kosher it out in advance, the next time you turn on the oven, on Pesach, what time is going to be escaping from the wall? Chametz time. Therefore, we kosher the oven. How do you kosher the oven? The same way, the same principle. There may not be an illustration here, but we have another category. We would just add it. But we're not changing anything. We're just using it in the exact same fashion the way they did it then. How did they do it? We saw it. Hot water, you do hot water. In the spit over the thing, you do a spit over it. If you have a barbecue grill, that's exactly what you're supposed to do. You want to use, put it on for, I don't know, half an hour. I don't know. That's all. Even a half hour is probably enough. Because why with a barbecue? Because that's the way it absorbs.
You don't have to change like anything in there?
Hold on 1 second. All of this is of course obviously that the first thing you have to make sure before you get rid of the tom, what you have to make sure there's nothing. No the end. No real source of Esau. So when you're dealing with meat from the Gentile, you've got to make sure there's no meat. So what do you have to do? It's a five-letter word. Clean it. Clean it. Make sure it's clean. Same thing with a pot. Make sure it's clean. Make sure the oven is clean. That's the job. You have to make sure that the oven is clean. Then you can kosher. Yeah.
Let's say, hypothetically, you have a self-cleaning oven. You clean it out.
A self-cleaning oven does everything for you.
But no, it doesn't.
Yes, it does.
Halakhically,
it does everything. A self-cleaning oven goes 500 degrees more than any absorption is possible.
But let's say you just put on your self-cleaning oven and there's some things that don't turn to dust.
It doesn't have to turn to dust. It doesn't have to turn to dust. We know for a fact that the temperature that is applied in the self-cleaning cycle is 500 degrees more than any possible absorption that you could have done in your oven. It's higher than anything. It's 500, it's almost 1,000 degrees. The maximum temperature in broil is about 500, 525. It's 500 degrees more. You don't have, it's the greatest invention in the world for kosher.
So your self-cleaning does everything. But does that mean that you necessarily have to do two cycles, one to actually clean it?
No. With a self-clean cycle, you don't have to do two cycles. That magic self-clean in 3 hours does everything. Does everything. Now, I want to cover one more very important principle. Very important principle, ladies and ladies. Please. Four lines from the bottom of that source. Five lines from the bottom, and all of these utensils which you purchased from a Gentile, shenishtamesh bahen ad shelo yakvil u'shelo yagil u'shelo yilaveh. You forgot to kasher it. Okay? You purchased this utensil from a Gentile, it was clean, but you forgot to kasher it. Okay. Now you want to know, are you allowed to eat the meat that you cooked in this pot? Are you allowed? So let's see what the Braisa says. Tanin chada. One Braisa says, asur. You are not permitted to eat the meat in that pot if you fail to kasher the pot. That would have been our first inclination. Vitanya ida. However, another braita said, mutar, you're allowed to eat the meat. Well, how's that possible? everybody knows that if you're allowed to eat the meat, why bother kashering anything? Says the Gemara, not so fast. Lo kashering. There's no real question. There's no contradiction. Ha kiman de amar notain ta'am lidgam asur. Ha kiman de amar notain ta'am lidgam mutar.
Okay, here comes one of the most important principles.
What we are talking about is notain ta'am, right? The residue taste that's somehow lodged in the walls. We're not talking about a real piece of meat, because we cleaned it out. The taste that is lodged in the wall, when it will be subsequently purged into your meat, doesn't always enhance the flavor of meat. Doesn't enhance. Sometimes it will be detrimental to the taste of the meat that you are cooking in. So there is a debate whether no same time lifgam. Pagum. What does pagum mean? What does pagum mean? It makes it worse. It spoils it. If the taste that will be purged from the wall will spoil the new item, will make it worse, not enhance, embellish the taste, but detract from the taste. So some say, nonetheless, it's prohibited. And some say, under those circumstances, it's permissible. Okay? Now I'm going to give you one more, the Gemara quotes one more golden rule. If 24 hours have lapsed from the time that the Gentile cooked his non-kosher meat, if 24 hours have lapsed, the Gemara automatically tells us, without if, buts, whats, and hows, any ta'am that will be purged subsequently will be detrimental. Any ta'am that will be purged 24 hours after the original cooking will be lifgam. And according to the opinion, one writer, which we accept the halakha, notain ta'am lifgam is mutar. So I'm going to give you the case of the Gemara, and I'll tell you what the halakha is, because I know you're going to throw it out, because you're not going to believe it. Here is the case. You bought this pot from a Gentile. He's been cooking 42 years in this pot. Tray for me. Very nice. Very nice. Because I bought the pot from him. I put it into the mixer, but I forgot the kashi. I bought it last night at 9 o'clock, 9 p.m. It is now 9 p.m. again. I take my roast and I cook it in this pot. I would eat that meat in 2 seconds. So the Shulchan Aruch says I'm allowed to. Because any residue ta'am that will be purged from the walls of this pot, the halacha has testified on my behalf, will be taste that will be damaging to the product that I'm cooking. And no tain tam lifgam is mutar bidyevet. Is mutar bidyevet. What does bidyevet mean? If it was done with. In other words, when I have this pot which I purchased from the Gentile, what should I really be doing before I use it? What should I do? I should kashrut. That's what chatzila. So if you ask me what to do, the answer is, of course, you have to kosher it. But you forgot. That's vidyevet. It's already done. So now there are two questions that have to be asked. One is on the food. The food's done already. There's no way to repair it. So what's the halacha? No tain ta'am lifgam is mutar vidyevet. If you were to throw that roast out, you will violate a biblical prohibition of lo tashchit, bal tashchit. You're wasting it. You're throwing it out. You violate a biblical prohibition. Can I use that pot again? That's l'chatzila. No, I can't. What do I have to do before I use the pot next time? I have to kasher it. So, whenever people call, the first question that comes out of my mouth is, when was the last, because we don't have, it's not that much with chametz, with milk and meat. Here is the simple question, right? You have a meat pot. You forgot, or your cleaning lady, whoever it is, the housekeeper forgot and took a fleshy pot and made chocolate pudding in it. And your kids, they ate their fish, because that's the deal. You eat the fish and get the pudding. I know the routine. I experienced that for many years of my life. And now you're going to tell them, oh my God, I cooked it, or the housekeeper cooked it in a fleshy pot, can't eat it? No. You'll ask, when was the last time this pot was used for hot fleshings? For hot fleshings. If it was within the last 24 hours, the time of the meat being purged into the chocolate pudding, sounds funny, will supposedly enhance the flavor of the chocolate pudding. How that is possible. Okay, but you can actually have a Gentile taste it. If a Gentile were to taste it and say, this chocolate pudding stinks because it tastes like meat, then your kids are a lot easier right there. Even if it was within the 24 hours, because then it was looked down. But if 24 hours had lapsed, then it's 100% looking. Why? Because it's no tain, tam, livka. Of course, because that's mechatzila for the next time. You can't use the pot. Can't use that pot. That's why it's such an important, it's not that it's magic after 24 hours. What happens after 24 hours is that automatically the halacha considers any potential ta'am lodged in the walls of this pot that will be subsequently purged with the next application of heat as ta'am lifgam. And ta'am lifgam can't prohibit anything. Bidyevet. So, if you think about it, 90% of the time, I'm just saying statistics based on what people ask me, 90% of the time, the answer is that the product that you cooked in that item is probably mutter. Milk and flesh is probably mutter. Unless you know for a fact that very pot was used within the last 24 hours, if we're talking about meat and milk. Same thing with chametz and pesach. If you mistakenly took a chametz utensil out on Pesach, or before Pesach, and you were cooking kosher Pesach products in it, okay? And then I'm having 22 people for the Seder, and I cooked my chicken soup in a chametz pot. What am I going to do? If the pot had not been used for hot chametz within the last 24 hours, I will tell you, serve your guests the chicken soup.
Why should I tell them?
I don't give away the secrets of the trade. That's all. Don't tell them how you cooked it. It would be worth it. If it's less than 24 hours, of course you can't eat. This pot should not be used again until you kosh it. Because no tain tam lifgam is only mutar b'di'evet. Why do we come up with something b'di'evet, maybe, and learn? Because we just saw it as a debate. Some say that no tain tam lifgam is prohibited all along. Prohibited. So some say it's prohibited, some say it's permissible. So what do we often do? Come up with a little compromise. Lichatchila, don't rely on no tain tam lifgam. But b'di'evet, if already done, you can rely on no tain tam lifgam. Yes?
Let's say my favorite pot, and I want to make it kosher l'Pesach, but it has a plastic handle. The pot itself is...
Okay, that's good. That's a good question.
The handle is
it's a good question.
And
the handle can't be removed. Can't be removed?
You can remove it, but then you can't use the pot.
No. Can you unscrew the handle?
But then you can't kosher it.
Good. That's a different discussion. Whether or not halakhically you are required to kosher the handle of a pot. There's a debate. I can't cover that now. The answer is a machloikis. Lechatchila we say yes, and if it's a plastic, you don't kosher it. But since al pi din, many say you don't really have to, if there is severe financial loss, it's that I will tell the people, keep you just kosher the pot and don't worry about the handle. Because that's the way it's coded in Shulchan Aruch. So there are a lot of, for bottom line, there are a lot of other factors. But it doesn't, the question is to the principal. Does the handle, that's part of the discussion. I didn't plan on focusing, I didn't quote any sources. But I'm telling you, it's a debate. Logic would dictate, what would you say logically? Should you have to kosher the handle or not?
No, of course. Why?
Because there's no absorption into the handle. That's correct. The food is inside, it doesn't touch the handle.
Correct. What about the lid? It's a lid, let's say you have...
A lid is a pot. Of course a lid has to be kosher.
It's not metal. The lid could be made from tempered glass.
Okay, that's something else. A lid undoubtedly has contact with the vapor and everything, 100%, and the product itself. Of course you have to kosher the lid.
Can tempered glass be kosher?
You know the answer to that question already. No. Glassware, we do not kosher. That's correct. Unless you're a Smarty. That's correct. That's okay. So this is, those are, now, just to know the lingo, ladies and ladies, when something is within 24 hours, it's on the bottom of the page, letter Dalid, when something is within 24 hours, it's called a Ben Yomo. Ben Yomo, within 24 hours. Anything that is within 24 hours, the ta'am, that is the residue in this wall, we assume it will enhance the flavor of the product, and therefore you have to worry about it, l'chatchila and b'diavad. In theory, and not only theory, in practice, if you cook something in this pot, here's the Kess case, I'm serious about this. Now you say ta'am l'chatchila is measurable. I cooked something, I forgot to kosher a pot. I cooked something fleshy. I have a fleshy pot and I cooked my chocolate milk. Okay? I used the pot within the last 24 hours, it's fleshy. I can't taste the chocolate milk. Why can't I taste the chocolate milk? Because in case it does enhance, if it doesn't ruin the flavor, I am eating milk and meat. So I can't taste it. But if I have a housekeeper, I can ask the housekeeper to taste it. Does the chocolate pudding taste ruined? Does it have this meaty taste which is interfering with the normal, wonderful taste of chocolate pudding? If the Gentile were to say, this chocolate pudding stinks because it has got this meaty flavor, you're allowed to eat it too. You know why? Because it's not noisy. Why? Because what type of time was purged? Lizdam. We generally don't have Gentiles available to keep testing these things, so therefore we operate with one rule. 24 hours, it's a Ben Yomo. If it's more than 24 hours, it's an Eino Ben Yomo. That's the next one. Eino Ben Yomo. It's not within 24 hours. Once it's not 24 hours, you're only dealing with a Bidiyeved, no longer l'chatchila. If you're not dealing with l'chatchila, so now you know. So that's another principle that is incredibly important in this halakhic discussion. I want to just conclude with, on the bottom of the page, I put something down, Hekeira Bala versus Isura Bala. And this will take us back to what we started with. When the Kohen cooked the chatas in the pot, at the time, was there any problem whatsoever? It was kosher chatas meat. At the time of the absorption, it didn't absorb something that was yet prohibited. When did it potentially become something that what?
After the time.
After, right.
After at 5:36 tomorrow morning, but it had already been absorbed. That's called hetera bola, mazabola, to absorb. It absorbs something which now is a problem. After 5:36 tomorrow morning, it's a problem. But when it absorbed it, it was no problem at all. Why? Because it's not no time yet. When I cook non-kosher meat in a pot, what type of meat was absorbed into the walls of the pot? Isur or heter?
Isur.
That's called isura bala. Something prohibited was absorbed. Trust me, and I don't have time to elaborate now, if it absorbs something which was heter initially, we are much more lenient in terms of the demands of kasher. The demands of kasher. How would you move chametz? What state? What status does chametz have?
Hunter, fine.
Good. So before Pesach, what happens before Pesach? What would you say? Is chametz hetera bala or risura bala?
Hetera.
Good, that's what we would all would say. So based on the fact that this is probably correct, there are certain leniencies that we allow for kashrut and for Pesach based on this fact of hetera bala. But there are some who believe that chametz even lifnei ha-Pesach is isura bala. And you'll ask, how's that possible? How can chametz be viewed as something which is conceptually prohibited if you and me are allowed to eat it? And the answer is, there happens to be one place on this planet where chametz is prohibited all year. In the Beit HaMikdash. Every single korban that has to be made out of flour, every korban mincha, which is a flour offering, the Kohen has to bake as matzah, not as chametz. Except for two korbanot. The korban omer, the shtei alechem on shvuos, and the mincha of lachmei todah. The korban todah requires 40 breads, and including the animal, 30 are made into matzah, 10 are made into chametz. But except for that, and there's dozens of bread offerings in the Mikdash, they were all matzah. We read it 3 weeks ago in Parshat Vayikra. Ki chol se'or v'chol devash lo taktiru mimeno isha l'ashem. Matzah se'or. Se'or, yeast, literally means yeast. That's what it means, the fermenting agent. Anything that ferments is prohibited in the Beit HaMikdash all year. Anything that's sweetened is prohibited in the Beit HaMikdash all year. You can't use wine in the Mizbeah which has sugar in it. Can't. No sweeteners. I told you before, the Rambam says you can't use sugared wines for Kiddush. Because you can only use the kind of wine that's good on the Mizbeah. What the Rambam can't use? A Husho, can't use this. No. Right. So, since in theory, conceptually, there is some place in this world where chametz is asur, some authorities believe that even for us, chametz lifnei ha-pesach is isura bala. It absorbs something that is prohibited. Just so happens that during this time of the year, it's permissible for us. But conceptually, it's prohibited. And you might require a more stringent standard. But the halacha is, like we all logically think, that chametz before Pesach is hetera bala. If it's hetera bala, we have the right to accept certain leniencies even if we are kashering for Pesach. Even if we're kashering for Pesach. So what did we see, Rabotai? We saw a couple of principles. So the difference between the materials. Metal can be kosher. earthenware cannot be kosher. Today there are all types of new products, plastics and things like that. We are generally machmir. But unless we know for a fact it can be kosher, we assume that it cannot be kosher. So you can't kosher plastics, earthenware, you can't do all of that.
So when is this 3-day death?
Corral. Okay. So now I'll finish with that. Based on what we said today, if you have a cup which you use for soda, and you didn't put any chametz in it, and you washed your glasses separately, should you be able to use that? I'll come. Tell us to start. I don't want to delay. I'll come on. Just tell us to go ahead. Thank you. Should you have to kosher the glass at all to use it for Pesach?
Not if it was cold.
That's correct.
But the soda's got
correct.
In it.
Correct. However, because everybody is so worried about Pesach, it's quoted in Rishonim that what you should do, if you want to use the very same glassware that you used for chametz, and you want to use them at the Seder plate, what do you do? Soak them for 3 days in water, and you change the water every 24 hours.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Does it fit into any principle which we have understood? Absolutely not. I can't explain it. My mother did it, because it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch. It's quoted in
Shulchan Aruch.
Of course. If it was used for hot chametz and it's a glass, what's the bottom line?
No.
The fire that you can use it. I cannot, you can't.
But if you put it in a hot dishwasher, I just wonder, does that make it?
That's a different issue. That's like putting some, that's a different question. What happens if you wash dishes with something, that, you know, the meat with the, that's a different question.
I know, I didn't know if the hot water in the dishwasher is making it like the chametz.
It might, but since you put soap in, what might the soap do to any residue taste? Make it toggle. That's correct. So there is some debate about that. I say, I'm not giving bottom line halacha tonight. That's not the purpose of it. So you'll call your local rabbi and you'll ask him. Do you have any questions? Yes.
What is the
worst
of the
thing
you stick your soap
there
on the
dirt? Oh, what was that? That's a good question. It could be applied in one situation, nothing to do with what we discussed today, and it has virtually no application today. Where you stick something in the ground, where they used to have, the reason why they did that was, they used knives and they cut cold meat, non-kosher meat. But because the meat is fatty, it develops a little slimy, misty film on the meat. Now, they didn't have Brillo soap pads at that time. So running it underwater, is it going to get that film oily thing?
No.
But if you stick it into the ground serves as what? As if it would be an abrasive.
Oh my God.
And you stick it in 10 months and you get it off. That's where it comes from. For knives that not has nothing to do, if the knife absorbs hot meat, not, you have to cut it. It's only if you cut cold meat, and then you stick it, because it's an abrasive. Today we have Brillo, you don't have to stick it into the ground.